Informing America's farmers and ranchers. This is AOA, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And thank you for joining us here on AOA, Agriculture of America. Great to have you along for the conversation. Today, I'm your host, Jesse Allen. The program brought to you by our friends at Cenex. Not all grease is created equal. Cenex premium greases are made with high-quality ingredients to provide durable protection. Learn more. Just go to Cenex.com. Coming up on today's show, we're going to talk markets in just a moment with Brian Splitt from AgMarket.net. In segment two, we're going to have a conversation with Leo Wilkinson from the American Feed Industry Association. Going to catch up on a few different issues that they are watching at AFIA. After the bottom of the hour, we're going to discuss the new tailpipe emissions rule and talk about some of the impacts there to combustion engines and more with Alan Schaefer from the Engine Technology Forum. And then at the end of the show, April is Invasive Pest Month. We're going to learn more about that with Catherine Bronski from USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. She is their National Policy Manager. We'll talk with her at the end of the show today. Let's kick things off, though, and take a look at what's going on in the market trade. Brian Splitt with AgMarket.net joins us here on AOA. Brian, welcome back to the show. Hope you're doing well, my friend.
Good morning, Jesse. Always great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with just a look at what's kind of going on in this grain market. Pretty quiet start Thursday. Weekly export sales out. Any big notes for you with what we saw with export sales on Thursday?
Weekly exports for corn were still pretty good, pretty close to a million tons there, down from last week and towards the lower end of expectations, but still a healthy number. And I think as we move into the April WASDE report, we're likely to see the USDA maybe address the pace of exports we have right now. We are running ahead of what we need to in order to hit their goal. So I could see an increase in corn for export and reduce the old crop balance sheet a little bit in that particular category. Wheat was in the middle of the trading range. We actually had a pretty healthy new crop wheat sales from the usual buyers there. Beans, again, below the low end of estimates. And one of the major reoccurring themes that we're seeing right now on bean sales, not only the fact that they're low, but we're not accumulating new crop sales. And a lot of times when we've got a healthy export program for soybeans, we'll be already ahead of the curve here, seeing new crop sales accumulated to a pretty good extent before we hit the actual beginning of the marketing year, which is at September 1st. So we're not seeing new crop on the books, and China's just not there at this point.
Well, I know, Brian, looking at these markets technically since Thursday's big USDA reports, there hasn't been a lot of fresh news, and largely it's felt like these markets have just kind of stunk, for lack of a better term here. Outside of Wednesday, we had a little reversal, but Thursday's not shaping up too good to start. It just feels like there is a lack of momentum in these grain markets here post-USDA numbers, and I'm wondering if we've done some technical damage to any of these charts, Brian.
Well, not as of yet, and I guess it's just more disappointment. We haven't taken out support in corn, for example, in the May contract. We did go back down and revisit the report low, and actually we took it out by a little bit, closed back above it, and I'm sure we ran some stops. And that was maybe the obvious trade was, hey, that was a friendly-looking report. I'm going to own corn and risk below the report day low. So any of those short-term buyers were kicked out of the market, but we are since trying to recover. So that's what we need to do is go back, revisit support, have it hold, and then try to resume the uptrend. At the very least, maybe we're in a 425 to 445 type of a trading range. I don't know what would be around the corner short term to get us through this resistance that we have for that report day high. But if we do get a little bit of a backtrack in the old crop carry out and see that come down a little bit in the next report, depending on what our planting weather looks like, we're still going to be looking at Safrina corn in Brazil. So things can happen. This is the time of year for us to build some premium into the market.
I'm wondering, too, your thoughts in some of these outside markets. Crude oil has been above $85. We've gotten above $86. Gold reversing a little bit Thursday, but gold has just felt like it's that next parabolic market, so to speak. I mean, for you, some of these moves in various outside markets, is there anything there of note that could impact the ags right now, Brian?
Well, you mentioned two very macro type of commodities, crude oil, and to that extent, RBOB and heating oil, which is going to be your unleaded fuel, and then your diesel. And so this rally in energies has actually been led by RBOB, the unleaded gas. You know, we had taken out the highs from September in about mid-March, and then crude oil did it this week. And so heating oil is actually the one that's lagging. It looks cheap compared to the other two. We're right up against a downtrend here, but it looks like this is the type of pattern in heating oil where if we were to break out to the upside, we would see measurements up near $3.15 roughly. And we're trading around $2.70 right now. So that might be something that producers think about. But there's a lot going on geopolitically. You know, we had the embassy in Syria. The Iranian embassy was attacked by Israel. So there's a lot of tension right now in the Middle East, and there's talk about potentially seeing Iran retaliate with cruise missiles and drones to some targets in Israel. I don't know if that's hyperbole or not, but if that were to happen, then I think you'd see another escalation in energy values. The metals. You know, the gold market has really led this this precious metal market higher. We've seen silver in the last 2 days up about a buck a day. And so there's been some very strong moves here. And that's pricing something in too in a big picture. I don't know exactly what it is. It looks to me like silver has a massive head and shoulder bottom on it that's been forming over the last 3 years. And that would project quite a bit higher, up to about $36 an ounce or so if that were to break out to the upside. We haven't done that yet, but we're very close to it. We got to get through about $27.70 per ounce on silver. That would be basis the July contract, and we're trading around $27.30. So if we do see something create that momentum ignition event where this stuff really starts to push, I would think that there's going to be some interest there. And I've seen other comparisons about, you know, the price of gold versus wheat is at all-time record levels. So some of these commodity ratios are not lost on some of the managed money out there.
Very interesting thoughts there, Brian. Real quick, we got about a minute. Cattle, just any quick notes for you. I know it's been a tough week with the HPAI concerns kind of permeating through these cattle markets. Anything of note there for you that you're watching right now?
Well, I think from a very big picture sense, the way that we've recovered from the December lows really resembles a lot like 9 years ago. You know, we had a very hard break that was about a month apart from when we really started the break this year. And so what I mean by that is we had a move down to the December lows from the September highs this year. 9 years ago, it was October to January. We recovered similarly. And so the ultimate outcome of that 9 years ago was a rather catastrophic break for the next year and a half. The June contract on live cattle had a monthly reversal in the month of March. So it traded above February's highs, and then at the end of the month below February's lows. And that is not a good sign usually.
Brian Split with AgMarket.net. Brian, always good to talk with you on AOA. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, bud. Appreciate it.
All right, coming up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex, we'll talk with Leah Wilkinson from the American Feed Industry Association on the way right after this.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
From grain and livestock market analysis to policy updates affecting agriculture, the latest agricultural weather, ag news headlines, and much more, we have you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. Get up-to-the-minute information with the American Ag Network on air, online, and on demand. Find us on your favorite social media platforms and follow the American Ag Today podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Every day, our brave military men and women, along with their families, make tremendous sacrifices for our freedom. Patriotic Hearts, a nonprofit organization, is dedicated to supporting these heroes and their families in their times of need. By donating your unwanted card to Patriotic Hearts, you'll be supporting job transition and job fair programs, veteran entrepreneurship, counseling, and retreats for combat veterans and their spouses. Call 800-560-3870. You'll receive a tax deduction, and we'll arrange a free pickup at your convenience. Imagine the difference you can make in the lives of those who have given so much for our country. Your car donation will directly impact military families, veterans, providing them with the support they desperately need. Call 800-560-3870. You can become a part of something bigger. Join us in our mission to uplift and honor our military community. Call 800-560-3870 to donate your unwanted card.
You can't escape a traffic jam. Know what else you can't escape? Seasonal allergies. And you might think you can avoid that coffee stain until... Oh, really? You can't escape a lot of things in life, but you can escape prediabetes. Prediabetes captures 1 in 3 adults. There are usually no signs of prediabetes. In fact, most people don't even know they have it. But with early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Take action by taking the 1-minute risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. You might not be able to escape having this song stuck in your head, but you can escape prediabetes. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex Premium Diesel and Premium Lubricants. Trust your local experts at Cenex or visit them online at Cenex.com for more information. Joining us now, we're having a conversation with the American Feed Industry Association, AFIA. Their Vice President of Public Policy and Education, Leah Wilkinson, is with us here today on the show. Leah, great to talk with you again. It's been a while. Hope you're doing well.
Thanks, Jesse. Hope you're having a great spring and maybe ready for the eclipse to happen if you happen to, or some of your listeners happen to be in that path next week. We are here in Central Texas, so...
Yeah, I think we're pretty close to it as well in Tennessee. I think we're like 98% of coverage, something like that. So that is going to be a fun event to watch early next week for sure. Well, I appreciate the time. We have a few things to catch up on here. And first, I want to start with EPA's draft risk evaluation of formaldehyde. And this is something that AFIA is objecting to. Can you give us some background and details on why this is an issue, Leah?
Yes. So formaldehyde is an approved ingredient in animal feed that many people may not know about, but it's an important tool in our food safety toolbox. So it is approved for use in swine and poultry feed as a means to reduce salmonella that could be present in the feed and to mitigate that risk. And we've been approved to use it. It's been something that's been used across agriculture applications for well over 40 years. And it's been safely used, safely applied to feed. But now we're under threat that that food safety tool could be removed from us by the review that's going on at the Environmental Protection Agency. So there's three different independent reviews going on, and the one that came out in mid-March was the Toxic Substances Control Act review of the substance. And so it's out for public comment and peer review, which are some of the steps that they have to go through as part of that toxic substances review. And from an AFIA feed industry standpoint, we've been working and trying to raise awareness about this EPA review over the course of the last couple of years, because we want to make sure that they are following all the science, that they're considering all of the applications that are used for formaldehyde and how important they are to the feed industry and to animal agriculture. Because if we lose this tool, it's going to be harder for us to prevent some of those food safety pathogens in feed. And then we know that formaldehyde is has the great potential to help us if we would ever have viruses like African swine fever in the United States. So there's research that shows that applying formaldehyde to feed would lower that virus's presence in feed and be another barrier for the transmission of the virus if African swine fever would ever to enter the United States.
I'm glad you brought that point up as well. I was going to ask about that. It to me, overall, formaldehyde, you know, over 40 years of use and science behind formaldehyde, to me, this seems like a no-brainer as to why we should be able to continue to use formaldehyde. It's something that I would agree with AFIA here is very concerning to see this risk, draft risk with the EPA right now, Leah.
And so they're, you know, they're looking at the potential risk to the workers in the plant, right, as they're making the formaldehyde. And we're just trying to make sure that those standards stay science-based, right? You know, right now they're proposing levels that are below what's in the ambient air because formaldehyde's a natural substance, right? So it's in the air you and I breathe every day. And right now the level they're trying to set in those facilities is even lower than what's naturally occurring. So just trying to make sure that they're based in science and agriculture, because it's more than just feed where agriculture uses formaldehyde, just that agriculture can continue to have this safe and effective tool.
Well, I want to segue from something that AFIA is objecting to something that you are supporting. And I'm going to save myself from reading the full title and just call it by its acronym, the Emit Less Act. Leah, talk about this piece of legislation that's been introduced here just in the last few weeks in the Senate and why AFIA is in support of this act.
Yeah, so you're going to see the theme continue of trying to make sure that our livestock producers and our industry have access to innovations and tools in our toolbox, right? So this is another one. So the Emit Less Act was introduced by a bipartisan group of senators. So Senator Bennett from Colorado, Senator Crapo from Idaho, Senator Baldwin from Wisconsin, and Senator Moran from Kansas. And the purpose of the bill is to expand the research and incentives that are available for that will help with the adoption of technologies that can reduce emissions on farm, including the role of proper animal nutrition and specific feed ingredients that are under investigation and approval right now that can specifically look at methane. That's really what the target of this bill is methane. And reducing and mitigating those methane emissions. So it really is something positive. It's trying to increase the focus on research and to provide opportunities for producers to receive some cost share dollars when these products are approved and that they could be used on farm to help recoup some of those costs.
Well, Leah, as we keep our focus on Capitol Hill as well, other things you're watching right now with AFIA, of course, we're still trying to figure out a farm bill. Any updates on the Innovative Feed Act as well? Other issues out there? What are some other things that AFIA is looking at right now?
Yeah, so AFIA has been supportive of the Innovative Feed Act, which is a bill that's introduced in both the House and the Senate. That would provide a pathway to get feed ingredients that don't necessarily provide taste, nutrition, or aroma, which is what traditional feed ingredients we think about. They have to provide taste, nutrition, or aroma. But these would be ingredients outside of that category, but that still act within the animal's digestive tract. And those that want to make production claims, food safety claims, environmental benefit claims, that we'd be able to get those regulated as an animal feed and not as a drug. And so that those bills have been introduced in the House and the Senate, and they've been working their way through, getting co-sponsors and getting bipartisan support. And we continue to hope that when the opportunity arises, that piece of legislation can get included and can get passed to give FDA that clear authority to regulate these products as feed ingredients. They still have to be proven for safety for the intended animal species, still have to be proven that the products work. It's just a more appropriate regulatory pathway for these products instead of being classified as a drug, which we don't think they are. We think they're feed ingredients. So we've been supportive and continue to urge support for that across the House and the Senate. You mentioned the Farm Bill. So it's an election year, right? And mm-hmm. the Farm Bill was supposed to have been done last year. It's been punted to this year. The House Agriculture Committee is getting closer to releasing text. We hear that that could possibly be happening sometime yet this spring, and that they would be moving through their committee process. But because it's an election year, it's going to be an unconventional year as to how things happen and move. And so I just tell everybody to hang tight and keep an eye out and keep in touch with their congressmen and senators, and keep telling them how and why these bills are important to you across agriculture, and to we'll see where things go before or most likely after an election in that lame duck session.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you there. Good thoughts. And I know, folks, if they want to stay up to date with issues that AFIA is talking about and news and more, they could do that very easily on the AFIA website, right? AFIA.org.
AFIA.org. And then we have an advocacy center, too. So if you want to hit that button and contact your members of Congress and ask them to support the Innovative Feed Act, and we'll keep putting up more advocacy and different bills up there as the year goes on.
Fantastic. Well, we do appreciate the time. And with that, we will let you go. AFIA's Vice President of Public Policy and Education, Leah Wilkinson. Leah, thanks for joining us on Agriculture of America. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, up next on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. We're going to talk about EPA's new heavy-duty vehicle emission standards with Alan Schaefer from the Engine Technology Forum next on AOA.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home, as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-926-1701. 800-926-1701. That's 800-926-1701.
You're listening to AOA. Here's a check of agriculture markets for the American Ag Network. I'm Jody Heemstra. As far as corn, news is rather scarce. There were no USDA flash sale announcements last week. However, corn export sales continue to run above the yearly USDA estimate, as do corn inspections, which are up 33% to date. In the U.S., ethanol production rose more than expected last week by close to 2% to 1.073 million barrels per day, and likely will lead to a USDA increase in corn used for ethanol by perhaps 25 million bushels to 50 million bushels in the April WASDE report. Still weighing on corn is the recent escalation of bird flu cases, and that's been sensationalized by some news services as human-to-human transmission is feared. The latter has not occurred to date. For soybeans, the Brazil soy harvest is advancing and could be approaching 80% complete by the end of the week. Weather in Brazil has significant rain chances for Brazil over the next 10 to 12 days, that before turning drier in May. Argentina's soy harvest is in the initial phases, and the U.S. soy meal industry is feeling the impact of Argentina's soy meal exports. U.S. soybean exports leave much to be desired, and outstanding soy sales are down 66 million bushels from a year ago to an eight-year low, that as Brazil has dominated export demand as of late. Funds are still carrying an estimated net short position of a combined 187,000 contracts of soybeans and soybean meal. For wheat, early strength came from reports that the Russian government had halted some exports of one of the largest export houses, Aston, as they probe grain quality after complaints from importers. New from China is that their wheat crop is now as large as 138 million metric tons, with imports still pegged at 10 million metric tons. Wheat exports for the week were a minuscule 0.6 million bushels for 2023-24. I'm Jody Heemstra.
My name is Ariel. When I arrived in the U.S. at 19, I struggled to find job opportunities without my high school diploma. My entire life changed when I took a chance and got my high school diploma at age 22. Everything I have, my education, my career, my marriage, I owe to the Adult Literacy Center and my teachers. They were with me every step of the way, helping with my English and math, making sure I push through all the challenges.
Ariel, your success proves that what I'm doing as a teacher has real meaning.
It was an honor helping you achieve your greatness. Now you're helping others achieve theirs. It inspires me.
Education was the key that unlocked all my opportunities.
When you graduate, they graduate. Find free and supportive adult education centers near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And thanks for sticking with us here on AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex. Cenex Premium Diesels, their hard work and long hours in extreme conditions. Well, we know that those things aren't new, but Cenex Premium Diesels will meet those demands for today's toughest engines. Premium diesel to keep you going. Learn more online. Just go to cenex.com. Well, thinking of premium diesels in our equipment and thinking about our heavy duty engines that are out there working overtime on the farm, on the ranch, and on the road, well, we want to talk about some new heavy duty vehicle emission standards that were released just at the end of the month of March by the EPA. Here to have a discussion and tell us more about what exactly we're looking at here and the impacts, he is the executive director of the Engine Technology Forum. Alan Schaefer is back with us here on AOA. Alan, thanks for the time. Hope you're doing well.
Good morning, Jesse. Great to be with you.
Well, just for starters, Alan, can you set us up here and give us some details on what exactly this new final rule on heavy-duty vehicle emission standards looks like from the EPA to start?
Sure can. So we're talking really here about what we call heavy duty trucks, and it also includes buses as well, but any heavy duty vehicle that's over 8,500 pounds gross vehicle weight. So we're talking delivery trucks, refuse haulers, dump trucks, box trucks, everything on up to the tractor trailers that that haul the grains and corn to market. So it's quite a range of vehicles that are covered by these rules. And these are what's referred to as the phase three of the greenhouse gas rules from EPA. And it's the last piece of the what they call the cleaner trucks plan that was announced about 4 years ago. And so coupled with some new engine standards that took effect in 2022, this phase three rule that just came out last week kind of sets the bearings for the future and sort of where we go with commercial truck transportation and the types of fuels and technology that are going to be powering the trucks in the future. The rule is it's big. I've been through it once already. Mm-hmm. It's about 1,200 pages, but it takes effect starting in 2027. So that's, you know, basically 3 years from now. And it covers a period of 2027 through 2032. So it's only establishes new standards. It doesn't apply to any of the existing vehicles, engines out there. It's only for on-highway applications. So that's kind of what it covers. Just to give you a flavor of what it looks like in terms of how much more, much lower, excuse me, it is in allowable emissions. So it's about, for the largest trucks, the tractor-trailer type combination units, it reduces the greenhouse gas emission allowable levels by about 40% from the initial, from the previous generation of rules. And for the medium-duty vehicles, it cut them by about 60%. So it's a pretty big whack of allowable emissions. And so now the question turns to, how are manufacturers going to meet these standards?
Well, and thinking about that, Alan, thank you for the setup on that and giving us some background here. You know, I look at that big whack to that total and really, you know, kind of pushing things towards that zero emission type of model. Well, I know for a lot of these heavy duty trucks, that's a challenge. That's a challenge to achieve a lot of those standards. And it almost seems like, as I was kind of reading through things a little bit here too, that this new rule really doesn't take into account things like advanced biodiesel technology and renewable biodiesel fuels, et cetera, to help with getting us down to zero emission type vehicles. Is that the case? Would you agree with that, Alan?
It is. And EPA, as they put this rule together, they certainly are driving towards a zero emission vehicle. And the industry, for its part, has expressed a commitment to that a number of years ago. So it's just a question of when and how, I think, really, at this point. The EPA rule, it really says that manufacturers can use any number of strategies to achieve the compliance levels. So they sort of pencil out, if you will, what they might see in terms of a mix of technologies in the future. And for some of the largest trucks, there's this feeling that at the very end of the day in 2032, that 75%, more than the three quarters, will be internal combustion engine vehicles. So diesel or natural gas trucks, and only 25% would likely be zero emission vehicle of the heaviest trucks. Now, if you get down into some of the smaller, lighter weight vehicles, the more you go down the scale, expect maybe 60% of those vehicles in the light, heavy duty vocational sector will be zero emission by 2032. And still about 40% will be gas or diesel at that point. So manufacturers have and so there's just a range of opportunities. But I want to go back to something that you said at the beginning there, and that is, unfortunately, the way EPA did this rule, it's really only based on tailpipe emissions. So it does not factor in life cycle considerations at all. And so, unfortunately, what that does is a life cycle approach would really support consumer choice for fuels and vehicles. So truckers and farmers and others could decide what strategy worked best for them. But instead, just focusing on tailpipe vehicles really takes that choice away, and manufacturers have to decide which engine or technology type they're going to offer in their vehicles. So that's an unfortunate aspect of this rule.
We're talking with the executive director of the Engine Technology Forum, Alan Schaefer, about the new heavy-duty vehicle emission standards. And I'm glad that you brought that up, Alan, because that was exactly where my mind was going here. It just feels like that this rule by EPA is really kind of boxing us into a corner, so to speak, and taking away that consumer choice rather than letting, you know, truckers pick what type of vehicle they want to use. You know, if they're buying new equipment here starting in 2027, it's basically saying, well, no, you don't have that choice. And so I guess looking out here to the future, again, that's the best analogy I can come up with. It kind of boxes us into a corner here, Alan.
It does, and it will definitely reduce the number of choices and types of vehicle configurations that are available in the marketplace for internal combustion engines and zero emission vehicles, just the same. I think, you know, everyone shares the idea that we should do better to reduce our impact on the environment and to,
yes,
and to impact climate change. And there's just many different ways to go about that. And we see a very challenging path for heavy duty vehicles that switch from diesel to something else. And particularly on the electric side, I think one of the analysis I saw from the engine manufacturers said that they would have to install more than 9,500 heavy duty zero emission vehicle chargers each month between now and 2032. 9,500 heavy duty chargers every month between now and 2032 to make this rule work. And so this rule, I think, has a lot of the current feeling within the administration. We saw it back down a little bit in terms of the ramp up, in terms of the different percentages in the early years were sort of scaled back a little bit, but they did not scale back those percentages in the out years. So they're sensing, the administration, EPA is sensing the fact that this march towards zero emission technology is not going as smoothly or as uniformly as they thought. It's going to be uneven. It's going to be with the fits and starts here and there. And ultimately, it's going to be hard to say, you know, exactly what kind of infrastructure you're going to have in 3, 4, 5 years to power these vehicles, which today don't exist in any large number. So yeah, we've got some interesting times ahead.
I was going to say, we already have problems with charging stations for light duty vehicles in many parts of the country. You throw on top of it charging stations for heavy duty vehicles, and it just seems like a compounding problem here, Alan. I guess final thoughts from you. And I agree with your statement too, that we're all for, you know, mitigating climate change, but I think we have to go about this in a smart manner. This doesn't seem like it's necessarily the best way to do it. Any final thoughts from you, things that folks need to keep in mind as we're looking at some of these new heavy duty vehicle standards?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, at the end of the day, for us, I think the good news here is that there is a path forward for internal combustion engine. The gas and diesel and renewable natural gas, renewable diesel fuels are going to continue to play a bigger and bigger role in powering the vehicles that that do the work that our economy and the ag sector demand. So it's fortunate that we have that here. And even in EPA's most optimistic outlook, they still see that, you know, in the end of the day here, internal combustion engines, diesel, gas, natural gas, are still going to rule the day. And it's just a question of, you know, how fast these the changes come for the alternative. So we do have that. And of course, anyone that wants to have a positive impact on the environment and reduce their emissions today, get out of that old equipment, get into something newer that's got the advanced emissions controls, and start using advanced renewable biofuels. It's just that simple.
Learn more at dieselforum.org. And again, we appreciate the time. The executive director for the Engine Technology Forum, Alan Schaefer. Alan, thanks for being with us here on AOA today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jesse. Have a great day.
All right. Coming up next here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Cenex can help you determine the right high-quality premium lubricants to keep equipment protected for the long haul. Learn more at Cenex.com. We'll talk with Catherine Bronski from USDA's APHIS on the way next here on AOA.
We're with Bridget, whose husband won't be home for months, and whose daughter is due any day. We're with Mike, who's leaving home to protect his family and yours. We're with all service members and their families who need community, connection, and maybe a bit of magic. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today. We're with Liam after his fourth military move, when being new is starting to get old. We're with Tara during the holidays, when she misses home the most. We're with all service members and their families who need connection, comfort, and a home away from home. Are you with them? Learn more at USO.org today.
Farming is dangerous. There's dangers all around us. We work around it and we live around it every day. And we just become desensitized to what's around us.
We go through safety training and, you know, we try and do these things to make sure accidents don't happen, but you just never know.
There are so many farmers that I think take for granted all of the underground utilities that are there.
You don't want to hit a gas pipe because that's your life. The other part of it is if you hit certain things, you're liable for it.
I mean, we kind to know what's out here, but all at the same time, you just always call.
FarmSafe 811 starts with you. Whether you're installing drain tile or doing any sort of digging, always call 811 and wait for any underground lines to be marked and have the depth confirmed. That's farming with care. But if a line does get damaged, go somewhere safe and call 911.
Always keep safety in the back of your mind. Just stay humble.
For more information, go to farmsafe811.org.
Every Tuesday, we'll be sitting around the table, sponsored by CHS. Join us and learn how CHS creates the vital connections that empower agriculture, helping farmers and ranchers like you succeed. We'll hear from different voices from throughout the cooperative system, sharing stories about how good things happen when people work together. Join us around the table every Tuesday or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more. When news happens in agriculture, or when the markets are moving, we've got you covered as your trusted voice in agriculture. The team at the American Ag Network has the knowledge and experience to keep you informed on the issues impacting farmers and ranchers. We've got you covered on air, online, and on demand. Find the American Ag Network on your favorite social media platforms, and also follow the American Ag Today podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We are the American Ag Network.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
Get the latest bonus interviews, exclusive content, and more with the American Ag Today podcast. Just search for American Ag Today and give us a follow wherever you get your podcasts.
The landscape of media has changed, and people are more skeptical than ever about where they get their news and information. While major news outlets show decreasing credibility, your local farm radio station still shows strong marks. In a recent survey, farmers rated information from their farm broadcasters as almost twice as reliable as major news outlets. Farm radio continues to be transparent, honest, and trustworthy. This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-844-903-1744. 1-844-903-1744. That's 1-844-903-1744.
Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
Keeping America's farmers and ranchers informed. AOA. Now back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to AOA, Agriculture of America, brought to you by Cenex and Cenex Premium Diesels and Premium Lubricants. Trust your local experts at your nearest Cenex location or learn more. Visit them online at cenex.com. Well, joining us now, we are talking with the USDA National Policy Manager of Plant Protection and Quarantine Programs with APHIS. Catherine Bronski is with us here today on AOA. Catherine, thanks for the time. Hope you're doing well.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on your show today to talk about invasive plant pest and disease awareness month and why it matters across the country.
Yeah, we're happy to have you here. April is, in fact, invasive plant pest and disease awareness month. So let's just start. Why are we talking about this during the entire month of April? Why should our listeners be checking their trees and around their home for invasive plant pests in the month of April, Catherine?
April is a great time to get outdoors. You may be working in your garden more, going for more hikes and walks around the neighborhood. And it's also a great time when many invasive plant pests start to emerge and they're easier to see. People play a crucial role in preventing the spread of invasive species and protecting our forests, crops, and landscapes. And so April is a great time. We want to encourage everyone as they're getting outdoors to look for signs of damaging invasive species and plant diseases known as hungry pests. And these invasive insects and plant diseases cost the U.S. an estimated $40 billion each year in damages to crops, trees, and other plants. And yeah. As you get outside, you may be able to find them before they emerge because they're easier to see. You can look for those egg masses and other things on your outdoor items.
Man, that is a big, big number indeed. What are some of those hungry pests that we need to watch out for that could threaten us across the country? I mean, if you had a couple you could point to, what are some of those big ones we need to keep an eye out for, Catherine?
Yeah, some examples of hungry pests are fruit flies, citrus greening, spotted lanternfly, and others that can damage crops and agriculture across the U.S. And we also have invasive pests that harm our trees and natural resources, like Asian longhorn beetle and spongy moss, that can easily spread unknowingly by people moving them on the items that they're taking with them.
Well, thinking about this, how can the public really make a difference by reporting some of these invasive pest sightings? I would think the public, they may see them, but they may not necessarily know what to do. So then I would imagine reporting to USDA and local agencies would maybe come into play there. Talk about that a little bit.
Exactly right. We have a great website. If you visit hungrypests.com and click on the state tracker to find your specific state information, quarantines, and you can contact your state plant health director. There's phone numbers and emails right there and there's the state tracker. And you can find out more information at hungrypests.com of what these pests may look like, what to be on the lookout for, and how to prevent their spread. In addition, there's a place for hungrypests.com where people can report any pests, and if they see signs of damage or are concerned about their backyard trees or plants, you can report these pests at hungrypests.com as well.
Catherine, how about climate change? How much of an impact has our changing climate had across different parts of the country when it comes to invasive pests and hungry pests that are impacting us? Has there been a big change in recent years?
Yes, weather can magnify the impact of invasive pests. And we know climate change can increase the level of plant pest infestations and disease infections. It allows these pests to produce more generations each year. And with climate change, unfortunately, it extends the suitable habitat for plant pests, so they can spread to new areas more easily. To help protect our local ecosystems and our domestic food supply, it's really important for USDA, as we are on the lookout, to also enlist the public for their help and help to protect plant health together.
Yeah, getting the public health to tell folks, tell USDA what they are seeing in their backyard is so crucial. Any other tips, Catherine, that folks need to think about and be aware of as they are out here during the month of April, during the springtime, and scouting around their yard or their farm, looking at invasive pests? Anything else that folks need to keep in mind?
Yes, if left unchecked, these invasive plant pests and diseases can threaten our food supply, the economy, and our environment. It can hurt a wide range of businesses like our farmers, wine producers, lumber industry, and we could end up paying more for food and produce if the farmers lose crops to these plant pests. So we can prevent the next fruit fly outbreak There's some different ways, in addition to getting out into your own backyard and your neighborhood or hiking and traveling to new areas and reporting what you find, is really important to make sure that you're declaring any sort of fruit, vegetables, food, or plants when you're traveling from new areas. Because, for example, we have a fruit fly outbreaks in California right now that are damaging up to 400 species of fruits and vegetables, including oranges, grapefruit, pumpkins, cherries, and more. And this is caused by people, unfortunately, moving these pests to new areas, not knowing that they're bringing fruit that's infested with fruit flies. So in addition to making sure to declare any sort of agricultural item, and when they're traveling from new places, please do not mail your homegrown fruit and vegetables to friends and family, other people. Make sure that you're keeping your garden and fruits and vegetables local to not spread pests and diseases to new areas.
Well, good thoughts, good reminders. Catherine, one more time, what is that website where listeners can go for more information?
Yes, thank you for asking again. The actions we take in our own backyard can help to protect these vital resources here in the U.S. and around the world. So we encourage everyone to learn more about how to recognize and report signs of invasive pests at hungrypests.com.
Hungrypests.com for more information. Again, April is Invasive Plant Pest and Disease Awareness Month. And we appreciate the time today with Catherine Bronski, USDA National Policy Manager for Plant Protection and Quarantine Programs with the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. Catherine, thanks for joining us on AOA today.
Thanks for having me.
With that, we're out of time here on AOA, brought to you by Cenex. Downtime's a waste. Keep your equipment running smoothly by using high-quality Cenex premium diesel fuel. Learn more at Cenex.com. On the next AOA, we're going to talk about FAA approval of drone swarms on farms with Arthur Erickson from Helio, and we'll talk Farm Bill with Francine Miller from the University of Vermont Law. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.
Challenge. It's not something you shy from. It's a chance to up your game. Every day brings a new challenge, but with the Enhanced Channel Seed brand on your side, you can rise to it. With our top-performing seed, innovative digital tools, and expanded agronomic support, you can turn tomorrow's challenges into your next advantage. Your Enhanced Channel Seed brand. Let's rise to the challenge. Learn more at channel.com/rise. Read and follow pesticide label directions, IRM, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
And we're back, looking at another lopsided matchup, Jim. Today we have a combine taking on a train.
Yeah, that heavy train is about 1,000 times heavier than the combine. No competition there.
Right, especially given that it'll take at least a mile to stop that train.
That's 18 football fields.
It's no contest. Every day people are injured or killed trying to beat a train at rail crossings. See tracks, think train.
This message brought to you by Operation Lifesaver.
A promise is potent, born of intention, fueled by commitment. It's seeing things through, always showing up. And we know a thing or two about promises here at Susan G. Komen. Over 40 years ago, we locked arms with you toward one vision, a world without breast cancer. By investing in life-saving research and standing up for patient rights, we are shifting the system so all people everywhere get the care they deserve. Because if you've just been diagnosed and don't know where to turn, we've got you. If you can't afford the treatment you need, we've got you. And if you are driven to raise money to honor the best friend you've just lost, we have a place for you here. Because of you, we're supporting those who need help today while tirelessly searching for tomorrow's cures. Ending breast cancer needs all of us. Visit Komen.org and be a part of the Susan G. Komen community today.